Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
I really would like to get a few questions because I think that, for me, those presentations have brought up some really great points. So those of you who are desperate for coffee, that's fine, sneak out. But we'll take sort of 5 to 10 minutes if that's okay.
You are watching.
And I can see a question from Sanju
there. Sanju Alwan, I'm a GP in North London. Question about design. General practice, particularly UK general practice, has been at the receiving end of the largest systemic experiment in organisational design in the world over the last 10 years. And I am interested to hear what you think it has done to innovation in general practice, and I have a particular view on that. But I would also be interested to hear how you think we can move from where we've been to where we can liberate the concepts of design to allow innovation to flourish, particularly in an environment where we have a £20 billion deficit, which is the real challenge, I think, that we all have to face in terms of trying to deliver higher quality services at increasingly lower cost. And I think that there is something around exposing waste and dealing with that. But I do fundamentally also believe that actually innovation's got to come from local environments, and that actually the kind of sort of systemic organisational design that we have seen being exposed to, I think, is putting general practice primary care in some jeopardy. And Michelle talked a little bit about change in the 1980s and in innovation in the 1980s and now. And for me, the kind of sort of critical element of that is systemic design and what it does to the ability of small organisations to flourish in innovation terms.
Does anybody go first? In terms of increased quality, I think the question is quality of what? If you're talking quality of those 5 minutes for value added, then I'm not sure how much design can impact on that, except talking about how to manage relationships. The whole of the rest of the journey, design can have an impact on. And there is that, it's a bit of a glib throwaway, but if you think that good design is expensive, ask yourself how expensive bad design is. So having to redo things, having complaints, having people unhappy with you. But the truth is, if you're not incentivized through customer experience, if there's nobody actually measuring you on how well the customers think the quality is and how happy they are, then nobody's going to act. No incentive, no action. It's that thing of there's no need, no compelling need. People don't tend to do too much. But I do agree with you that it is this kind of, and it was a kind of branding and retail mantra many years ago, that think globally, act locally. That you have to be, for me, freed up to provide services in a way that you think best meets the needs of your patients and your customers. And then some form of measurement comes in that rewards you for doing what you think is the right thing, not just on that 5 minutes of consultation and a clinical outcome.
Yeah, if I could add to that. I think out of the chaos, you've heard this thing, there is opportunity. I think there is a window, though, within which the community, the clinical community, needs to jump in and be a presence and be active. Very often we are quite passive and receive the changes and just swallow them and carry on. I think there is a real opportunity, but we'll have to make ourselves seen and through action to be grasping that. And design offers that at a local level with clinical commissioning groups. You can start to become more critical and more questioning about things that are coming to you if you start doing things like user journey mapping and ethnography and really understanding what you're developing. So I think there's a small window.
Really interesting question, Sanju. Thank you. I mean, I think if you were to start with a completely blank sheet and design the model of general practice that we would all like to deliver today, it would look very, very different. What you've described are the symptoms of, you know, the pressures and the constraints that surround in terms of the environment, which make those big groundbreaking changes less possible. But within that, I think particularly with the landscape now of CCGs as membership organisations, there is an environment within which collaboration across practices is possible. And to kind of free up resources for investment in primary care development, we we need to take a sort of a hard look at the round picture. Some of the solutions will lie in that kind of level of collaboration and how much practices can work together collectively for their whole population. Some of the solutions will lie in the relationship with the commissioning board to tackle unacceptable standards of care, which we know we see in parts of the capital. But together, I think that this is a really good opportunity. We have the forum through CCGs to really start to talk about what change is necessary in primary care, what changes do we want to see for our patients. And within your own individual practices, start to draw on some of the latest learning in service redesign, experience-based user design, to make changes today. So, yeah, there's a global, if you like, rather a long-term kind of view, and which we need to make sure all the system leaders are working to support practices to develop and improve. And NHS London is committed to supporting that to happen. But then there's also the what can we do today to take out some of the frustrations that our patients are seeing. And I think the only thing stopping that is taking a step back, taking a bit of time, but also drawing, as Jack said, on some of the expertise that we have in London. We're surrounded by amazing organisations that offer innovation and design solutions. Who would, you know, love to get give their perspectives on services, and there's so much we can learn from them.
Okay, we'll take two more short questions. Vijay.
Vijay Bajpawan, GPs in a deprived area in Woolwich. Just a practical advice, really. We want to engage patients in terms of design and all sorts of things. In an area like ours, we have tried everything, talking personally, leafleting, putting posters in, sending emails. We just can't seem to get five people, patients. It's all right to say we need to engage patients. Any practical advice, what else I can do as a small practice to actually get this varied patient group? At the moment, just to comply with this, we have asked relatives of the staff or others to come, which is not really patient participation.
So we'll take a short answer, although very nicely teed up for the next session, which includes a presentation on user-centred research or patient-centred research. Do you want to explain?
Yeah, I was going to say ask Becky, who's sitting over here, is what they do. There are people who do research, and they're experts in what they do, you know, and they will get people. Ask how she does it. She said she's here later on this morning, I think, isn't it? Just after
the
break.
Yeah, so after the break.
She's the person.
So we'll hold that, but thank you for the question.
Yeah, my question is, in the last 15 years, I mean, what we've heard has been very interesting about design being very important and about being a whole process, a holistic process. Why is it then that most innovations within the last 15 years that have been funded by the NHS have all been supply side driven and nothing has been done about the demand side?
I will answer my view on that. I spent 4 years in the NHS. I was brought in as head of design and human factors in the National Patient Safety Agency. I arrived in what was then the third largest organisation on the planet and went hunting for all the other design managers who understood design, and we could all see what was going on. There wasn't one. It was in terms of somebody with a real deep knowledge of design management, it was me, 1.3 million people. My experience is the NHS does not have a culture of design. It doesn't understand design. It's a long way to go before it gets this universal picture of design, as opposed to a collection of explicit disciplines. If I can ask anybody in this room, what does interior design mean? And I can get a fairly good answer. But if I just say, define design, even the designers in the room start to go, well, it's this kind of... So it's the language even in the design industry is quite new, but certainly in the NHS... there just isn't a culture for it. It's seen as this flippant added extra that goes on top of other things. So I think we have a long journey to take.
If I just to add to that, so I think part of your question was about, well, how do we move resources from focusing on reactive models of illness to more proactive upstream kind of wellness and lifestyle-type models of care as well. And I think that that's an important thing to draw out. It's part of the challenge for CCGs as they start to think about where they invest their resources in the future, and as referred to, you know, the challenge on financial constraints at the moment. And part of that's identifying models that really deliver strong health outcomes, that are focused and targeted on the populations that you know and you serve. And we'll hear more about that later this afternoon, when we hear about the Brazilian model on family health services.
we've got to move on because I've left you only 15 minutes for coffee.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.